Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone.
This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is Wanda Brunstetter. Wanda is a New York Times best-selling and award-winning author. She will be providing us with an inside look into the Amish culture and way of life in America. Good morning, Wanda. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning. I'm doing great. It's great to be here with you.
Wonderful. It is a pleasure to have you on the air. I am excited to learn more about the Amish culture and way of life, as well as about your books. I mean, it's fantastic. You have written 60 books. That's just tremendous. The latest one, The Tattered Quilt, is a wonderful read, so congratulations.
Well, thank you very much.
Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Well, back when I was a child, I was struggling for acceptance in a very dysfunctional home. I never dreamed at that time that I would someday be a New York Times best-selling author. I wanted to be an author. I loved to read. I loved to write. But I had no clue that someday my dream would come true. But God had his hand on me. And because my mother took my sister and I to church, I found a personal relationship with Christ at a very early age. And that helped me through many difficult years. And when I was 18 years old, I was blessed to meet my husband, Richard. And after knowing each other only a few months, we got married. And some people thought we were crazy. They thought our life probably wouldn't last together for 6 months. We've been married 50 years.
Congratulations.
So God has truly blessed us. And by the time that we were 25, we had two children, a boy and a girl. And our children are raised now, and we are now blessed with six grandchildren. And more recently, we just had our first great-grandson, whose name is Ezekiel. And we got to meet him a couple weeks ago. So we enjoy our life together, traveling. My husband's a retired minister, and so now he's free to travel with me. And we do quite a bit of traveling, particularly into the Amish countries, to visit with our Amish friends and do research for my books.
You mentioned you love writing and, of course, you love reading. When did you actually discover that you have this wonderful talent for writing?
Well, it was when I was in second grade, actually. My school teacher asked the class to do an assignment. She asked us to draw a picture of a moth. Well, I was never good at art. That was just not my thing. And I was just dreading this picture that I had to draw of the moth. I didn't want to turn it in. So I got the brilliant idea that I would write a poem to go with the picture, thinking maybe that would help the teacher like my picture a little better if I just had this nice poem. So I wrote the poem about the moth, and I turned it in with the drawing. Well, the teacher called me up to her desk after school. And I was really, my knees were knocking. I thought I'm in big trouble because I didn't follow her directions. But the teacher looked at me in a most serious way, and she said, "Wanda, do you know that you have a talent?" And I was thinking, she's got to be kidding. I can't draw. What does she mean? She said, "This poem is really good. Have you ever thought that maybe someday you'd like to be an author?" And I thought, wow, she planted the seed. And I had at that point, I loved to write little short stories. And so the seed was there, but of course I really didn't do anything with it until I was married. And I got the opportunity to take my first writing course. And when I took that course, it was like someone had let the caterpillar out of the cocoon, and I felt like a butterfly. I knew this was what God had intended for me.
That's very interesting. I mean, you obviously got a gifted writer, and like you say, the Spirit moves you in the right direction. That's just wonderful, because now you're entertaining millions and impacting their lives in a very positive way, very enchanting way, and I think that's terrific.
Well, I love what I do, and I give God the glory for it.
Who are the authors that inspire you?
Well, back when I was a child, I loved to read Betty McDonald books. Mm-hmm. Nancy and Plum was one of my all-time favorites. I was absorbed in her writing. But as I became an adult, I started reading Laura Ingalls Wilder and Jeanette mm-hmm. Oak. And I think they were probably my biggest inspiration mm-hmm. because they wrote about simple times mm-hmm. and people who were similar to the Amish. They lived that very
yeah.
plain life where their focus was not on material things, but it was on God and their family. Mm-hmm. And so I would say those two authors, Jeanette Oak and Laura Ingalls Wilder, would be my most inspiration.
Laura Ingalls, Little House on the Prairie.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
My mom loved the show on TV, and I loved it too. I had no choice. I had to watch it when I was growing up, but I loved the show. I really did.
Uh-huh. I think a lot of young men and even older men, my husband
yeah.
liked the show. You know,
yeah.
It appealed to all ages, I think.
The actors in there are just wonderful. I mean, the mom,
mm-hmm.
and especially, of course, Michael London playing the father, and Laura herself was just fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the actors can bring a story to life. I've
That's
seen
right.
that in one of my own books that's been recently made into a musical play.
Mm-hmm.
And watching the actors on stage bringing the characters to life.
Yeah.
It's been so much fun and so exciting.
There is writing, and then there's writing. Do you consider yourself a storyteller?
I guess I do, but the stories are based on real life.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not like something I just dreamed up, if you know what
right.
I mean.
Yeah.
When people read my stories, they can relate to them.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. For example, like the people that tell jokes, they can tell it very well, and the people that are really good at telling jokes. And in your
mm-hmm,
books,
mm-hmm.
you are a tremendous storyteller because you're right. You don't fantasize about things. It is fiction, but then it is real life incorporated into real life, real situations, and giving that drama, the romance, the connection that people can relate to. In some ways,
yeah.
reading your book allows you to make that real connection, and
mm-hmm.
that makes a difference.
That's right. That's right, and I consider my writing to be a type of ministry because
mm-hmm.
it does touch people's lives. I've had so many people come up to me at book signings or send me emails and tell me how much the books have meant to them, and maybe some particular incident that took place in a book really hit home because they've been through something similar. And
mm-hmm.
the scriptures that I used and the way that the characters dealt with the situation,
right.
The reader can relate to that and often be helped in many, many ways.
Right. It inspires others, and that's the beauty of your writing. Now, do you use your writings to offer you an escape for yourself or to entertain others? Because I knew you said that you had grown up in a situation where you felt maybe turning inwards in terms of writing and reading. So how
mm-hmm.
does that writing evolve over the years?
It's done both, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I first began writing, it was a total escape for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know when I was a child and I read and wrote short stories that I kept hidden, it was an escape. It took
mm-hmm.
me out of my dysfunctional home and into a different world, and
mm-hmm.
it helped me be able to cope. And
yeah.
Even now, when I write a story, I'm not really escaping from anything. I'm transported to a different world. A different
mm-hmm.
life, a different home. I literally become the characters that I'm writing about, and that's very fun. It's kind of like
yeah.
watching a movie. You know, you get absorbed
mm-hmm.
in the characters in a movie, and it takes you away for a while, and we all need to get away for a while.
Right.
But I also like to entertain others. I like
mm-hmm.
others to enjoy what I've written, either in a fun sort of way or
mm-hmm.
In a helpful sort of way.
Do you catch yourself daydreaming quite a bit?
Yeah, I do. I'm always thinking about the what-ifs, and like
right.
if I'm in an airport and I see
mm-hmm.
a variety of people,
uh-huh.
I'll often ask myself, I wonder why they're doing it that way. I wonder why they dress that way. I wonder why they
mm-hmm.
said that.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
a wondering person. And so my mind is always working, and it's either if I'm working on a book, oftentimes in the middle of lunch or
mm-hmm,
taking
mm-hmm.
a walk or doing anything, I'll get a scene idea or even a dialogue idea. So I'm kind of a dreamer. My father said to me once when I was a child, why don't you get your head out of the clouds and come down to earth? And as for a father to tell a child that was very hurtful for me.
Yeah.
I didn't understand why he would say anything so mean. But since I've grown up, I kind of can understand that, because some children do tend to daydream too much when they should be doing other things. So I might have been guilty of that.
Wonderful story. What is the inspiration to your love affair with the Amish culture and way of life?
Well, when I was a teenager, my parents were going to make a trip to the East Coast for a convention. Mm-hmm. And while they were there, they went to Lancaster County. They had some friends in the area, and they saw the Amish. And my mother came home with some photos she had taken and a lot of postcards. Mm-hmm. Showed those to my sister and I, and I don't know why, but I felt absolutely drawn to those pictures and those people. I wanted to know more about them. And I remember saying to her, oh, I wish I could have gone. I would love to meet the Amish. And she said, well, you never know. Somewhere down the road in your life, you might make a trip back there. And I remember thinking, yeah, right. Well, lo and behold, I married a man who lived about 50 miles from Lancaster County. And so one of his friends, my husband grew up in a Mennonite church, and one of his Mennonite friends actually worked with an Amish man in Lancaster County. They were partners. And so he took us there one day to meet the Amish couple. And to get to know them personally was like a dream come true for me. Mm-hmm. And I realized at that time that the Amish were not a curiosity. They weren't just something for tourists to gawk at. They were real people just like you and I.
Yeah.
And they have the same problems we do. And oftentimes they deal with things the way we would, even though they live a different lifestyle. Well, I remember when we drove away from that house that day, I said to my husband, when I write my first novel, I want it to be about the Amish, because I want people to understand them the way that we're beginning to. And it wasn't too long after I started writing that I started delving into my ancestral life on my father's side, mostly because he had a relative, it was my great-great-grandfather, whose last name was Landis. And I knew that that sounded like it belonged right there in Lancaster County. So I did some research online and pulled up some information, not only about my great-grandfather, but about his father and father before him. Mm-hmm. And I found out that they were part of the Anabaptist faith. They weren't Amish, but they were one. They were part of like the Dunkards, and I remember thinking, "Wow, it's in my blood. Maybe that's why I feel so drawn to these people."
Yeah.
And you know, it seemed like after that first encounter with the first Amish couple, everywhere we went, God opened doors, and we met Amish people. Sometimes they came to us. It was amazing.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you guys are relatable, and that's important to them too, and not necessarily to them, but to every one of us, because if there's some sort of commonality and we can be able to communicate effectively and make that real connection, obviously we are drawn to people that pretty much the same, I guess, as we
are.
Right,
that we feel a connection with, and that's the thing. My husband and I both feel a connection to the Amish, and it's amazing. They feel it with us too. And we had some Amish friends come out here this spring and to Washington State, where we live, and spent a week with us. And they said they have never felt more at home and more comfortable in an English home. And that made us feel really good, because we love having that connection with them.
Wonderful. How did you come up with the ideas and the characters for the various novels?
Well, from all walks of life, really. Sometimes I'll dream up a character in my head. It'll be just something that'll pop into my head. But oftentimes the people that I write about are based on people I actually know, or someone I've met, or someone I've seen somewhere. And the ideas for my plots that I write about come from things I've seen or heard. Sometimes they come from my own life experience, something that I've dealt with or some family member has. I don't write the story as though it is that person. I would never do that. But it's kind of like bits and pieces of life experiences and things that I hear about. I mean, for an example,
mm-hmm.
I heard about some Amish young people who were involved in a serious accident. And I remember wondering what it was like for them and for their families in when this disaster struck. And
yeah.
so my brain started creating a storyline. It's called the Indiana Cousins series. There's three books.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
in that story, these young Amish teenagers are on their way to Hershey Park in Pennsylvania. And they have hired a driver, and the van that they're driving in gets hit. And it's a horrible accident, and some of them are killed, and some of them are hurt seriously, and some come out of it good physically but scarred emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And so I created a three-book series out of that. So my brain is always working, and I'm always observing. I'm a very observant
yeah.
person, and when I hear things, my ears perk up.
You are extremely creative, and you're able to parlay a lot of things that you observe in a very positive way. So that's the unique spiritual gift that you have, which serves you very well and will serve others very well as well.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the biggest misconceptions about the Amish culture and way of life?
Well, I've got two in particular that I'd like to
mm-hmm.
mention. The first is that a lot of people think that the Amish are some kind of a cult and that they're not Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that's so not true. Now, I'm not saying that every Amish person is a born-again Christian any
right.
more than every English person who attends church.
A Christian, yeah.
Question or heart.
Yeah.
But when the Amish, their very faith is based on Christianity. And
mm-hmm.
when they join the church, they must confess in front of the church that they've accepted Christ as their Savior. And even though, as I say, not mm-hmm. all take it personally,
yeah,
many, many
yeah.
do. And the ones that we know, the ones that we're friends with, have a deep spiritual relationship with the Lord.
Yeah.
And I have noticed in some Amish communities, now there are some Amish communities where they believe in works, and
mm-hmm.
they don't understand about the real meaning of salvation, but not
mm-hmm.
not all, and most are not. But I've noticed in some places where we visited and know Amish people, there's almost like a revival among the Amish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're becoming bolder about proclaiming salvation in their personal relationship with Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And at one time, they would never have done that. Even if they felt it in their heart, they would not have shared it with others. Some Amish are actually handing out tracts, and that was almost unheard of 20, 30
mm-hmm.
years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So they're becoming bolder in their, I guess you would call it evangelizing, because
mm-hmm.
At one time they felt like people will know that we're godly people by the way that we live.
Yeah, right.
And that's
right.
true to a certain point.
Interesting. The thing that came to mind for me is, I think it was on the Discovery Channel. They make all this reality TV
mm-hmm.
kind of stuff. You have, I think recently, the Amish Mafia.
Oh,
is
I'm so
real?
Glad you brought that up. I'm
no,
so glad
that
you brought that up.
Is it not?
You know, no,
it's like...
not. No, it's a bunch of hype.
Mm-hmm.
The Amish are embarrassed by it.
My God.
We were with one of our Amish friends a few weeks ago in Pennsylvania, and he said
yeah.
sometimes he feels like crawling under a rock because he feels like people are watching him and staring at him and thinking, does he belong to the Amish mafia? And
yeah.
he said, how
yeah.
can people think that? There is no Amish mafia, and the people that they're portraying
yeah,
aren't
yeah.
even Amish. These are people who either left the Amish faith or never joined the church in the first place. Some of them aren't even Amish. And so
yeah.
it's a reality show. What can I say?
Right,
but
right.
that kind of leads me to my other point that I wanted to make about the misconceptions.
Yeah. Yeah.
This whole thing of Rumspringa, are you familiar
mm-hmm.
with that? The time in a young person's life when they're allowed to explore the English world. Well, people think that means all Amish young people run wild, that they drink and do drugs and have wild
okay.
parties. And that
yeah.
is so not true. I've granted there are a few who do,
yeah.
but not the majority don't. The parents don't allow that. They do sometimes allow them to do a little more than they would have otherwise to choose. They need to have that right to choose. Do they want to
right.
go miniature or go English?
Right.
And you know what? Only 10% of the Amish young people leave the faith.
Mm-hmm.
Most
mm-hmm.
of them turn around and come in and join the church. So there's a big misconception about the Amish, and all the reality TV shows have probably added to the reason people think that.
Right, right. Well, one of the concern probably would be forcing someone and not allowing them to leave, because this is where
right.
the stigma comes in. God believes in free will, and
mm-hmm.
then at the same time, you know, are we going to force a person to stay or force out? Either way, so to speak. And I think the misconception comes from people not understanding and respecting one's culture. You don't have to agree with it, but you have to certainly,
right.
if nothing else, respect people's
That's
way of
exactly.
life.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's right. And the reason that most Amish parents allow their children to do this mm-hmm. Rumspringa is so that they don't feel forced to join
yeah.
the church. They have that right to choose, and we all mm-hmm. deserve that right.
Right. Why do you think there's a tremendous draw and fascination about the Amish people as a whole?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that people are yearning to get back to their roots, back
mm-hmm.
to the basics of life that don't involve material things that we've become so reliant on, and especially in this electronic age. You know, most of us
mm-hmm.
can't make it without our electronics.
No kidding.
My readers often tell me that they long for a closer relationship with their family, which
yeah,
is something the Amish
yeah.
people have.
Right.
I got an email the other day from a reader who gave me a list of things
mm-hmm.
that she's incorporated into her life after
mm-hmm.
reading my books. You know, changes that
yeah,
they've made
yeah.
to simplify.
Yeah.
They wanna declutter. They wanna have a garden. They wanna spend more time with family and friends and
yeah.
Place their faith in God completely.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's. I think we all crave that. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like we all need to slow down and smell the roses kind of thing.
Yeah.
We want to get back to the simpler way of living.
I agree. And I think also because it allows us to have that opportunity to have self-reflection and
mm-hmm.
really in the end makes us appreciate those that really matters to us, so to speak. Our
mm-hmm.
loved ones, in the end, that's important.
Absolutely, and I think sometimes we get so busy, so caught up in
yeah.
things doing and going and running, we forget about our family and we forget about our friends and we forget
yeah.
that they have needs and that they love spending time with us. If we would all slow down and take the time to spend with each other, we'd realize how great it is.
No doubt about that. About a year ago, I interviewed a guest on my radio show by the name of Peter Golden. He is an award-winning Pulitzer Prize winner, I believe, who interviewed President Gorbachev, Reagan, and all the various presidents, including Nixon and so forth. He travels around the world, and one of the things we talked about, and I can't remember whether it was on the air or off the air, he mentioned to me one day what hit him was that he was in a car driving with him and his wife, bringing his daughter to college. It was snowing and so forth, and they were driving real slow. And it dawned on him at that moment in time, you know, the only thing that's important to me in my life, when it's all said and done, is in this four-door sedan
mm-hmm.
that I have. Nothing else really matters.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought
that's
that was
so
a
true.
Profound epiphany that he went through.
Yes, absolutely. And it's amazing what a simple thing like that will trigger
yeah.
our thoughts and make us realize, you know, wow,
that's
so
right.
true.
Yeah, I mean, instead of looking over the fence, look
mm-hmm.
inside, look at the people around you. Again, it's not about do we have to talk for 12 hours a day. No, it's the sense of being together, the connection, the warmth, and knowing
mm-hmm.
that person is right by with us.
Yeah, even if we're not saying a word. I mean,
Goodbye.
I like to get out and dig in the dirt when my husband loves to garden. And I
yeah,
don't get
yeah.
as much time in the yard as he does, but when I do, and we're working side by side, we don't have to say a word. It's
Precisely.
Just the idea that we're there doing something together.
Precisely.
Meaningful.
That's
mm-hmm.
right. The energy is there, and you don't have to worry about it. You don't
exactly.
have to manufacture it. It is
right.
there. It is natural,
right.
very natural.
mm-hmm.
How extensive is your research, and how real are all the characters and situations described in your novels?
Well, I always research pretty extensively for any of the books that I write, whether they be Amish-themed or of a historical nature. Mm-hmm. I not only visit every area that I write about, but I get to know the people who live there, and I think that is so crucial. My Amish novels are set in different communities within several states, and mm-hmm. in each of those locations that I've written about, we have Amish friends. And
yeah.
so when we go there, I immerse myself in their life and in who they are. And the characters that I describe in my novels, while they don't represent anyone I know specifically, they are often a reflection of the personality or the looks or someone that I know, or maybe just somebody I've met casually. And
yeah.
so I just personally feel that that research time is valuable.
Very interesting. What are the three major lessons that you have learned from the Amish people and community that serves very well that we could really adopt it to the American mainstream?
Mm-hmm. Well, first and foremost is to put God first in all we say and do. I have seen that in my Amish friends.
Mm-hmm.
Everything they do is a reflection of their faith in God and how they put Him first. Second is what we just talked about, spending more mm-hmm. time developing a close relationship with our family and friends. I think we all need that. And thirdly, reaching out to others when they have a need. So that's one thing I've seen the Amish do. I mean, they have helped total strangers.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't just their own family. If they see of a need, they'll drop everything and go help if humanly possible. And I respect that. And I've learned a lot from the Amish in that regard of not being too busy to help someone.
Yeah.
I mean, shame
yeah.
on us if we see a need and we say, oh, well, I'm too busy, and we look the other way. We need to help in some way. You know, we may not be able to go in and do something physically, but there
right.
are other things that we can do to help.
Very interesting, and that's very true. And a lot of times that comes back to walking the walk and talking the talk at the same time, because what they're doing, they're just basically living their life with unconditional love. When you need
that's
some
exactly
help,
right.
I'm there.
Mm-hmm. And they don't even take time to think about it. We
right.
might have to analyze it a while.
That's right.
Do I really have time for that? They don't
right,
do
right,
that.
Right.
They just react.
Yeah.
They go, they
yeah.
do when they see a need.
Right. That's amazing. Entrepreneurialism is huge in the Amish culture. How do the Amish approach education, and how can we incorporate some of their entrepreneurial ways in our own lives?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Amish children only go to school through the eighth grade. And some people think, well, that makes them stupid because
mm-hmm.
they don't have a high school education.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you, I
yeah.
know Amish school teachers personally.
Mm-hmm.
I have been in many, many Amish schools and witnessed the teachers teaching the children.
Yeah.
I know many Amish adults who've, like I said, only had eighth grade, and they're very intelligent.
Yeah.
I would say that the graduating eighth grade for an Amish is comparable to our 12th grade.
Right.
They may not know all the topics that our kids know. They don't get taught everything that our kids get taught, but they get taught the basic things that they need to know to survive in this world.
Yeah.
So when they graduate from the eighth grade, they learn a trade.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we would think, wow, an eighth grader learning a trade? Isn't that too young? But these kids are taught to work at a very young age and to be responsible. So they can easily learn a trade. And
mm-hmm.
this being responsible to work carries over into their adult life.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, due to the lack of land and the high cost of it in most places,
yeah.
most Amish are not farming for a living anymore. There are some that do, but it's not the norm. So they've had to learn other ways to provide for their family. And so they do whatever they need to do. They will even take jobs in factories, working long
mm-hmm.
hours in order to provide for their families. And we have one Amish friend that has three different businesses, and he has some people working under him, but he's very
yeah.
entrepreneurial. He,
yeah.
He amazes me sometimes because he's
mm-hmm.
going from one business to the next, making sure that it's functioning
yeah.
or doing the work himself.
Right.
So they
right.
do whatever they need to do to provide for their families. They're always thinking of new ways. And
right.
I personally believe that if more English parents taught their children how to help around the house, those kids would grow up to be more disciplined and working hard and
yeah.
with good ethics, and they would be wanting to have more of an entrepreneurial attitude as well.
Right, right. Well, don't forget, I mean, the Amish people have been around for a very long time and kept the culture going all through the ages in so many ways.
One of our Amish friends said to me, you know, people think we've changed, and they'll say, why have you changed? And he said, it's not us who's changed. You're the ones who changed.
Right.
Your world evolved. Ours stayed the same. So you're so right on that.
Well, we evolve slowly to accommodate the environment around us, but we don't necessarily change to pursue everything that, you know, in sight. And I think that's the difference, because they have core values, they have core principles that are very, very stern. I think that's something that a lot of times we on the mainstream side tend to have lack focus
on. Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
What are some of the most enjoyable and rewarding aspects of writing about the Amish people and culture?
Well, for me, the most enjoyable thing about writing about the Amish is getting to spend time with our Amish friends when I'm visiting an area or researching a book.
Yeah.
The most rewarding aspect is when readers tell me something they've read in one of my books has helped them through a difficult time or has led them to a closer walk with the Lord. That is so, that's so rewarding for me as an author. I mean, it's great to see your name on the bestseller list, don't get me wrong, but that isn't where it's all at for me.
Yeah.
It's knowing that something that I've written has touched someone's life and given them a closer walk with the Lord.
This is out of curiosity. Do you know if there are a lot of Amish people that actually bought your book to read, or is it more the mainstream Americans that bought your book out of curiosity and, of course, to be entertained, because it's a wonderful book and talks about romance, love, and everything else about real-life situation?
Well, Amish people do read my books. I'm not saying every Amish person has a copy of one of my books in their homes, but a lot of them do, and I've just been very, very surprised to not only know that, but I have Amish friends who have opened up their home, invited their friends and relatives into their home for a book signing, like a private book signing with me. And one of the ladies who came there, I asked me to sign her book, and she said, this really isn't for me. It's for my husband. He's the bishop in our community, and he reads all your books. And I thought, wow, what a confirmation. To know that the Amish are reading my books and that they feel that they're accurately portraying them, that's very important to me. And one Amish lady said to me, she came to one of my book signings that was in a bookstore, and she came up and she looked at me kind of curiously, and she said, I have a question for you. I said, really? What is that? She said, when I read your books, I actually feel like you're Amish. How do you do that? And I said, I don't know. It's a God thing. It's a connection that I have to you and your people.
Yeah. Well, you are Amish in some ways, and so you got to pull out that flow chart.
That's right.
You see this right here? See, right here, right there. to get it going. But that's wonderful, because I think that's the toughest critic that you can have. You are writing about the culture. And so, unless you know what the heck you're talking about,
That's exactly. I feel that way about anything, not just writing about the Amish, but anything.
Yeah.
If you're going to write about it, you better know something about it.
Right. Were there any challenges that you encountered while writing about the Amish people?
Not really. It seemed that once we made that first contact with those first few Amish friends, other friendships were established, and as I said before, the Amish would often approach me. I think it was because they knew who I was and what I was writing about. One time we were in Ohio, and we were going to be doing a book signing, but we were a little bit early, so we were killing some time. We stopped at a cheese store, and there was an Amish couple in the store who were actually from Pennsylvania. We knew that by the way that they were dressed. We struck up a conversation with them, and the next thing I knew, the man was writing down their name, their phone number, and their address. And he said, when you are in Pennsylvania again, we want you to come and stay with us. And this was a total stranger. I mean, we just met.
Yeah.
So I just felt so I felt so encouraged by that, and knowing that they trusted us that much.
Right.
And so we are now very good friends with this Amish family in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
We go to see them whenever we get to Pennsylvania to visit our own family.
Yeah.
All of my husband's family is still in PA.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. Well, again, the big word you used just now is trust. Trust comes from being authentic, being humble, and speaking from the heart. And so they can see that in you, and they respect and appreciate that, and that makes a difference.
I think so, and we see that in them as well. And so we have a kind of a mutual understanding, and we feel so comfortable when we're with them. And what I really like is when we go and we stay with our Amish friends, or even if we just go for supper one evening, which we do a lot, we don't want to leave. You know, the fellowship is so great. They're true people. They're real. There's no pretense. There's no phoniness at all about them.
Right,
they're just who
right.
they are. And they're a fun-loving people. They love to
right.
laugh and tell jokes and just have a good time. And so we feel renewed of spirit after we've been with them.
Well, guess what? They do live in the present moment, and there are very few of us that live in the present moment.
That's so true. Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the food. You mentioned about dinners and so forth. What the difference in terms of the food and so forth? After all, this show is about from the kitchen.
Oh, well, that's why I created a couple of Amish cookbooks, and I have a new one coming out next year. My Amish friends have shared with me many of their delicious recipes, and they are good cooks. I have not been in an Amish home yet where we weren't fed a delectable meal. And sometimes we get what we call a traditional Amish home-cooked meal, which would be the mashed potatoes and the stuffing and the chicken and all of the things that like to put weight on you and the delicious pies. But sometimes I will tell them, keep it simple. And so they'll fix something that they love themselves, and it's called haystack. We love that. Here on the West Coast, we call it Mexican buildup. It's like a layers. It's almost like a salad on your plate where you layer all the different things. And so we'll have that. But you know what? Sometimes the Amish will do things like we do, and they like to go out to dinner, or they like to order in a pizza.
People
think that's strange. An Amish would order a pizza? But yeah, they do. And they like to do fun things and different things. But but their cooking is good, and we've never walked away from an Amish meal yet where we felt like that it wasn't tasty or that we weren't full. We're always full.
Interesting. Now, this is a cultural thing. You do have so many different backgrounds. I mean, culture-wise, not all of them are Germans, but they're all Amish in a way. So do you get the different flavors of the food in some ways?
Yeah, sort of. It depends, you know. Like, we have Amish friends in Ohio, and we have some in Indiana. And they, when we go there, whatever they fix us is maybe a little bit different than what we had in Indiana versus Ohio or Pennsylvania. But a lot of it is similar, too.
And
some of it are recipes that are passed down in their families.
Right.
Sometimes they'll try a new recipe on us. We have one Amish friend in Ohio who loves to cook. And she'll say, well, you're my guinea pigs tonight. It's a new recipe I'm trying on you.
That's interesting. I don't think I'll be welcome, though, because I don't eat vegetables. All I eat is meat, grain, and all the fatty stuff.
Well, that's okay, because they'd feed you the meat and potatoes, believe me.
I can handle that. I can handle that. You have already alluded to the fact that the Amish as a whole is very community-minded. What are some of the ways that we can build our community with one another using the approach?
I think there's many things we can do. Of course, helping others, that's the first thing when we see that there's a need. You know, if we look around us in our community, there's always things where people are needing something. Getting more involved and even just in remembering to pray for people in our community that have a need. I think it's sad that so many of us have next-door neighbors, some of them close next-door neighbors, and yet we don't know them.
Yeah.
We don't even know if they have a need. So getting to know our neighbors is one thing we can do, so that we, oftentimes we can establish a great friendship, but we would know if they had a need.
That's very true. You just remind me of my mother when she came to visit me a few years back. It was interesting because I've been in the neighborhood for about a year at that time. And lo and behold, when she stayed with me for about 5 months, pretty soon, slowly but surely, she knew the neighbors more than I did. And don't forget now, she didn't even speak English because she's from Malaysia. And she would tell me, well, so-and-so, that one is a few months pregnant. That one is this, that one is that. And you know what? They brought food for her, and she cooked food for them, and I'm, like, left out in the cold. It was, like, it was so funny. I mean, it's like, oh, man. But it's just the natural. If you want to connect with your neighbor or with the community, yes, you can. You need to initiate it first. So
Yeah, we can't always wait for them to come to us.
Right, right. Very true. How does this ways that we just talked about right here play out in your most recent novel, The Tattered Quilt? Because it's a very interesting read, and I love the way you kind of get everything going. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, in the book, I have six very unique characters who are not Amish, they're English, and they come to Emma and Lamar Miller's home to learn how to quilt. But they not only learn the basics of quilting while they're there, they learn to work together as a group. And despite their different backgrounds. And sometimes they are reliant on each other for help, and they are learned to put their differences aside. And I think that when we allow ourselves to be part of a group or get to know our neighbors, somebody who may be different than us, maybe they're a different culture with a different lifestyle, we can learn things from them. And we can discover that, hey, maybe we do have something in common after all. After all, we're all people. There's got to be some thread there that we have in common with them. And that's what the characters in the book learn. And Emma is the main teacher, the Amish lady, and she's full of wisdom and advice. And all of these people come to the quilt class with a problem. And so she realizes rather quickly that she's not going to just teach them to quilt, but she's gonna minister to them in other ways.
Very true. Now, don't forget, there's always going to be someone that's a busybody, like Selma, so you got to mention that, too.
That's right. She was pretty hard to take.
Well, what I like about it is a wonderful snapshot about real life, real situation, and that applies everywhere. But then when you have a big heart, in the end, that's all that matters.
That's exactly right.
What would you like for the readers to gain from reading your books?
Well, I hope my readers will not only learn some interesting facts about the Amish way of life, but I want them to find a deep spiritual meaning to the stories I create that will offer them a sense of hope and peace. Because I think we need that, especially in our world today where things are so chaotic. We need a sense of hope, and we need a sense of peace.
Very interesting. Where can someone go to buy your books, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Well, my books can be found in most places that sell books, including those that are online. And there's information about all of my books as well as my upcoming events, and that can all be found on my website, which is WandaBrunstetter.com. There's also lots of information on my website about the Amish way of life. There's some Amish recipes. I share some recipes on there. There's information on places to stay while you visit Amish country. And on one page in particular, there are many, many pictures that my husband has taken on our visits into Amish country that are available to view and even to purchase.
Right.
So I want people, when they go to my website, to feel like they can stay there a while, like it'll take them into Amish country, because not everybody can travel.
I would say that after viewing your website and after viewing your husband's pictures, I think it should be one of those lists on your bucket list to at least at one point in your life to have an opportunity just to visit a community.
Oh, absolutely. Anybody who has a chance to visit Amish community needs to do it, because it's life-changing. And I hear that from my readers. And when they go into Amish country, they say it's almost like stepping into one of my books. They can feel it. They can. They feel like my character in the book is going to be right around the next bend.
Right. Well, that's the power of your writing and how realistic you have created the whole thing. And to be honest with you, you probably market the Amish community far better than anybody else could.
Well, thank you.
Were there things that you were able to contribute to the Amish community?
That I have been able to contribute to them?
Yeah.
I think so. I think because we've become so close to the Amish, they've seen not only me and my husband as real people, which we are. We're like them in that respect. We don't put on any airs. We're not phony about our lives. And I think that makes them realize there's other English people out there like that too.
Right.
And I just think that, well, and then when they came out here, our friends came out here, we were able to show them around our state.
Right.
In the 5 days they were here, we put 2,000 miles on our van. So we were able to show them what our life is like. And they went to church with us. Mm-hmm. And that was really interesting because we weren't sure if they would feel comfortable going to our church because our services are so different than theirs.
Right.
But they kind of got to see the other side of how we live and realize that we're worshiping the same God they are. We're just doing it in a little different way.
Right. We all share the same principles and values, and there's only one God but one God. That's it.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah, so that's good. That's very good. Tell us a little bit about your Donate a Quilt Square to Benefit Health and Wholeness campaign.
I'm really excited about this campaign. A few months ago, quilters were invited to participate in a Quilt Square drive, and it had an overwhelming response. We received hundreds of beautiful quilt squares from readers all over the country. And now we are going to be getting these squares made into two different quilts.
Mm-hmm.
One of the quilters is actually a friend of mine, an Amish friend of mine, who we hope she'll be able to get this quilt done by sometime next year at the latest. We're hoping to auction off these quilts. And the proceeds, this is the exciting part, are going to be donated to a facility in Goshen, Indiana called Oaklawn. And what it is it's a mental health service facility, and they have a separate building on their property where they minister to the Amish. I'm very excited about this because one of our Amish friends is on the board for that facility. And the Amish don't have insurance, so when they have a physical or an emotional illness and they go to the doctor or the hospital, they have to scrape the money together. They have to have funds set aside for that. They have auctions oftentimes to help each other. And so these quilts, and we're hoping they will bring in pretty good money because Amish quilts usually go for quite a bit, then that money will be given to Oaklawn to help with the Amish who would be coming there and needing assistance.
Very interesting. That's a wonderful campaign. Now, is it towards the tail end, or is it too late for someone to turn in the quilt squares?
Well, the cutoff date was the end of August, so we have all the quilt squares we need. Now it's just a question of getting them stitched together. And if somebody really wants to help, when we announce where the auction's going to take place, they can go and bid on the quilt.
Awesome. You guys have no idea where you're going to be doing the auction yet?
Not yet. We're still working on the details for that. But when we figure it all out, it will be on my website. There's a link on my site right now that tells about the donating of the Quilt Square benefit. And you can click on that link, and it'll tell you exactly where the auctions are going to take place.
Okay. Tell us your website again, please, your website address again.
My website is WandaBrunstetter.com.
Wonderful. How has writing about the Amish culture and way of life impacted you personally?
It has in many, many ways, but I think one of the biggest things has been and something that I have incorporated into my own life after spending time with them is the importance of spending quality time with my family, just like we talked about. You know, as an author, I could just literally become consumed in my work. I could be writing 24/7, but I can't allow that to happen because I have a life outside of writing, and I have a family, and I love spending time with them. And I, when I'm with my Amish friends and I see how they interact as a family, it's like a reminder, don't forget. And I try to be there for my family as much as I possibly can. I mean, there have been things that we have missed. We, you know, have missed birthdays and stuff when I'm on the road. But I always make sure that I call or send a text or whatever to my grandkids if I miss something and let them know I'm thinking of them. But we spend as much quality time as we can with our family, and I savor every moment of it.
Very interesting. Does the Amish people embrace the technological advances that we all experience right now, like the iPhones and so forth, those kind of things?
I'm glad you asked that question because that's another misconception. Some people think that the Amish are opposed to all modern things.
Yeah.
And they're not opposed to it. They're opposed to what it could do in their life if they use it too much. So some Amish people actually have computers in their places of business. They wouldn't have them in their home any more than they would have a TV. They wouldn't have that either. But a lot of Amish are using cell phones now, and especially if they have a business, like our friend I told you that has the three businesses.
Right.
Without that cell phone, he would have a hard time doing business. And so they are embracing whatever they need to embrace. And the bishop and the church leaders get together and decide how much can we allow, and does it have a reason? Is there a reason for allowing this? There are still some Amish communities that are very closed off to anything of the modern world. They won't allow cell phones at all and no computers or any of that.
Right.
But I'll tell you what, the Amish who actually do have a computer in their business, they know as much about a computer as I do. It's amazing how quickly they catch on and how they can work their way. I actually get an email on a regular basis from one of my Amish friends who has her own business.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Well, like everything else, it doesn't matter whether you're an Amish or just a regular guy. I think if you let technology and all the amenities of life that offers you to run your life, then you have no life. The idea is you are in control of your life. You use those technology and you use those amenities to complement your life, make it easier and so forth. This is where you will avoid walking while texting and walking into a pond or something like that that's been shown on YouTube.
I've seen that happen. I've seen people walk into other people when they're texting.
Right.
Yeah. So, if the item that we have serves a purpose and we're using it for that purpose, it's great. But we don't need to take it to the extreme. I mean, I've seen teenagers sitting at a table together, and you know how they're visiting? They're visiting with their cell phones and they're texting each other.
Yeah, they're not talking to each other anymore.
They're not talking. They're losing their communication skills.
You are obviously a very accomplished author. I don't care what people say, and I say this respectfully, you cannot make real connections with 140 characters.
That's so true.
In the end, maybe I'm old-fashioned. I still need to have that eye contact, that one-to-one contact to really connect with someone.
Absolutely. I'm with you 100%.
What advice do you have for aspiring authors who are just starting out in the business?
Well, first of all, they need to learn all they can about the craft of writing, whether it's taking writing courses, attending writer conferences, read. There's so many good books that are written now to help you in the craft of writing. And then write about what you're interested in personally and learn all you can about that topic. That is so important. And then lastly, never, ever give up. I think so many people who have a desire to write, they start off all excited and they send in their manuscripts and they get rejected and they feel deflated and they think,
yeah,
it's never going to happen for me, I'm no good, whatever, and they give up. And if we give up, of course, we'll never get published. And so the key is to keeping on writing, submitting, honing mm-hmm. your craft until you write something that just blows an editor away and you get an acceptance.
Fantastic. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the hour. Since our show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
Sure. My recipe for life is to put God first in everything that I do. And Proverbs 3:5-6 sums it up nicely.
Mm-hmm.
Trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths.
That's wonderful. I read that from time to time. To give strength. I mean, that's
yeah.
the thing. Because mm-hmm. you mentioned just now about the fact that people are turning down your manuscripts or this or that. Whenever you run into disappointments, doors close in front of you. If you get discouraged, then everything goes downhill.
That's right. Absolutely. And
yeah.
and we need to glean our strength from God and to lean on him. And, you know, we don't understand everything. He does. And he can help us through anything if we just put our faith and trust in him.
Wonderful. I want to thank you for the great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners,
thank you
for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Dr. Pamela Whibble. Dr. Whibble is the pioneer of the first community-designed medical clinic in America. Her model is featured in the Harvard School of Public Health's latest edition of Renegotiating Healthcare, Resolving Conflict by Building Collaboration. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thank you again for listening. Have a blessed week. Wanda, thank you, and have a blessed day.
Thank you for having me. It's been my pleasure to be here.
It's been a pleasure. Have a great day. Bye-bye.